Devam Sakhe Chanama Chanchu Padu Dhani Kasushi Dhaki Chanyan Kipe Sonamki Rabha Penche Sange Jupasho Jaram Sakhe Chanama Chanchu Padu Dhani Kasushi Dhaki Chanyan Kipe Sonamki Rabha Penche Sange Jupasho Jaram Sakhe Chanama Chanchu Padu Dhani Kasushi Dhaki Chanyan Kipe Sonamki Rabha Penche Sange Jupasho
Okay, then we'll start. Can you hear okay? It's all right? Okay. I kept thinking about one of the questions. It was your question. It was really good last night. And I've struggled with it for a long time. There's a book about it. He said, basically, when you go to... If someone's hurting someone and then you want to protect that person... depending on that person's karma, they're either going to be protected or not protected, regardless of what you do. You see what I mean? It's not really a result of your actions that they're being protected. It's a result of their own karma that they're being protected. So what's the use of trying to protect anyone? I just kind of struck me. It's a great question. It's maybe the most important question. There's this thing about emptiness that even though everything's empty, still you have to act. You see what I mean? The wimpier Madhyamika authors say, can I say that? Did I break a bodhisattva vow? Anyway. they say, by the way, that's the benefit of the book, right? They say just because things are empty doesn't mean they don't work. And somebody like Arya Nagarjuna or Jetsun Kapa will say, come on, say it stronger. Because things are empty, they work. You see what I mean? And it's absolutely true that when you try to do the perfection of giving, that whether or not it turns out to be of benefit to the other person, or it turns out to be a complete disaster, is completely up to the other person's karma. You see? Like, somebody like His Holiness can come into the world and try to teach Dharma, and due to their own karma, a certain number of people will think he's a bad person, even. You see what I mean? So is that a failure of the Dalai Lama? Should His Holiness stop teaching? You see what I mean? Because some people have the karma to think he's a bad person. You see what I mean? And the answer is no. You know what I mean? And it's very subtle from his side. It's a very subtle question. From his side, he must attempt to teach. And as he attempts with his purest motivation to teach, he is perfecting himself. He is practicing the six perfections, mainly by his motivation. The gauge of whether or not his actions are perfect are not the reactions of the audience, you see? And that's a principle of the six perfections. A bodhisattva goes into the world and undertakes giving and morality and patience, and they, whether or not they succeed has nothing to do with whether or not everyone's belly is filled or whether or not everyone's happy with them. They might even, you know, put them in prison and then nail them up on a cross or something. See what I mean? But that doesn't mean they weren't successful or they didn't perfect the perfections. And that by being that kind of being, they are being of ultimate benefit to other people. It's very subtle. So in the case of a person who's getting beaten up, if you go and try to stop it, according to their karma, you will be successful or not successful. And it really doesn't depend on your effort. You know, you have to try as hard as you can. You have to put your whole heart into it. Punch as hard as you can in special circumstances. With the purest motivation. And really all that's going on in the end is that their karma is ripening and they are being protected. You are the instrument of their protection if their karma is good enough. From your side, you are collecting intense good karma to see yourself in a Buddha realm in the future. And that's really what's going on. Is that better? It's very subtle. It's difficult. It's very difficult. It's difficult to think that a Buddha can perfect themselves and still there'll be people that want to kill them. You see? In this world. Which means that from their side they've perfected themselves. But from the side of those other people, it looks like His Holiness is a bad person. You know what I mean? And that's their own lousy karma. You know what I mean? That's all. About the subtle agitation question, we're going to hit it halfway through today's teaching, okay? I have three opinions for you. One from the First Panchen Lama, one from Pabongkor Rinpoche, and one that comes in connection with this chart, okay? The chart, by the way, is done, and my plan is that somebody has paid for all of them, and I know the person's broke, so it's even more virtue, okay? And if you have any mula, they'll ask you to put $10 in a box, okay? If you're a person with a lot of mula, put in more. If you're a person with no mula, just take one for free, okay? And then we're going to give all that donation to Land of Medicine Buddha, okay? So they can have more teachings there and things like that. Yeah.
Is the translation with it?
Yeah, it's like this. It's just like this. I think I haven't seen one yet, but yeah. The translation's down there, okay?
People can put it in quarters.
You can put it in quarters, like 3,000 quarters. Okay. No. Again, Dharma's free. I mean, take one if you don't have any mula. That's the way it should be, okay? And those of you who make big bucks, it should be like, you know. For those of you sitting on the edge and all you can see is my stomach, I'll say the English letters, okay? It's SEMNEGU. Better? Okay. Say, Semne Gu. Semne Gu. Sem means mind. Ne means state. Gu means the nine. Nine mental states. Okay. As you go through getting better and better in your meditation, you go through nine mental states. Okay. They are brought about by what we call the six powers. So very galupa. You know, five problems, eight solutions, nine states, six powers, four focuses. Okay? On this chart, they're like one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, and then up here is nine somewhere. Okay? First one is called SEMJOKPA. Say Sem Jokpa. Sem Jokpa. Sem Jokpa means you're just beginning to be able to put your mind on the object. Okay? It only lasts for a few moments. My meditation is often here. Okay? Few moments on the object, much more moments off the object. You see what I mean? My Lama used to call it a fly that just lands someplace and takes off again and buzzes around and then lands for a few seconds and then takes off again. And you only have the ability to keep your mind on the object for a few moments. And the moments on are much more rare than the long minutes off, okay? Say 30 moments off for every moment on, something like that. The mind is jumping around, flirting with the object, okay? You get to mental stage number one of the nine, right? To the first of the six powers. The first of the six powers is having somebody explain to you how to meditate, which is what you're doing right now, okay? The first of the six powers is learning from somebody the proper instructions on how to meditate. So getting power number one allows you to reach Semjokpa. Like you go home after class and you sit down and you focus on the... You try for half an hour to meditate, and it's only for a few moments that your mind is on the object, and then you're off wandering again. But that's a necessary step for everyone who wants to meditate. You know, don't expect to run the 50-yard dash in, you know, 50 flat the first day out, okay? It doesn't work. Be very happy, be satisfied, be contented. As long as you're sitting on your cushion for 45 minutes, an hour a day, you'll make progress. But don't get discouraged that you're not Milarepa on the first day, okay? It doesn't work like that, okay? You must go through these stages. And don't kid yourself, and don't get discouraged, and admit that you're a beginner, and start like that. And don't be frustrated with your mind. It's not so much wild efforts in the first week after this class. It's, you know, the tortoise principle, you know? If you get down on your seat for an hour a day for the next 6 months, you will reach one of the higher levels, okay? If you make extraordinary four-hour efforts Monday and Tuesday, you'll quit by Thursday, you know? That's the way it works, okay? I used to sort diamonds. Sorting diamonds, they give you a little tweezer. There's this pad of about this big of very, very expensive white paper that doesn't... It completely has a texture that holds the diamonds but lets them slide. And then they give you a special lamp. And then they turn off all the lights in the room. So it's kind of weird in a room of diamond sorters. It's all quiet. And then they throw 10,000 diamonds on the pad. And they say, sort them into three colors or something, you know. And you sit there, and the first day, you know, your arm's like this the whole day because you're picking them up with these tweezers. And you're going like this, you know, and you just get good at it. But the first few days, your arm is tortured, you know, and your body hurts, and then your eyes, you come out, you dream about diamond facets, you know, and then this is how it works. But we noticed this thing in the diamond business, you know, when I got up in the company and became a management person, that there was a direct correlation between how many stones they finished in a day, and whether or not this hand was on the pad, you see? Or whether it was talking to somebody or walking around, or there's this direct correlation between the hand being on the paper and how many diamonds they could finish, you know? So I'd say, I don't care how many you do, just make sure your hand's on the paper, okay? And it's the same in meditation, okay? If your butt's on the cushion, you'll make progress, you know? But there'll be a direct correlation between your progress and how many minutes of direct contact between your butt and that cushion, okay? Okay? Same principle. That's Semjokpa. For those of you who can't see, it's GYUNDUJOKPA. Say Gyundu Jokpa. Gyundu Jokpa. Gyun means like a stream or a continuous, like Gyun Shukpa means stream enterer when you first see emptiness directly. In that case, by the way, it means a person who has stepped on the conveyor belt and you are out of here sooner or later. I mean, stream enterer means once you see emptiness directly, you are inevitably moving towards enlightenment, okay? Inexorably. you've stepped onto this conveyor belt and it's going chukka, 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 and then finally, sooner or later it's going to deliver you to enlightenment. And you're definite, you know, you're just a matter of how fast the conveyor goes. Okay, turn on the tantra switch, like chuk, 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 okay, you know, like that, okay. Jopa means placing the mind on the object. So this means placing the mind on the object with some continuity, with some degree of continuity. In the text, in some texts it says, typically, by the way, Petra asked last night, you know, how do you know where you are? And in this instructions it's pretty clear. You know, the lamas have been pretty clear about how you know where you are. They say that this would be the amount of time it would take to do a round of Om Mani Padme Hum on your rosary. You know, when you get up to the point where, and I'm talking pretty fast Om Manis, okay? Like, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, you know, 108 of those would be about the time you could keep your mind on the object. And all the other time is off the object, okay? All right, something like that. This is achieved by the second power. The second power is called contemplating the instructions. You know, thinking carefully about the instructions allows you to reach a state where you can hold the object for a minute or 2 minutes, you see? Okay. Really going back, reading your notes about how to meditate, understanding it intellectually well, gives you enough strength to keep the mind on the object for maybe a minute or 2 minutes. Okay. He asked if you had nard during that 1 or 2 minutes, and the answer is no, not yet. In fact, it doesn't come until pretty much later. Okay. I think around number 6. Okay. She said, "Can you have little shots of nard?" Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you can have gnar in a good movie. You know, that's again, you have experienced gnar in your life, and it's a very good movie, very good book, making out with your girlfriend in high school. You know, and an hour goes by, and you're totally unaware of it, and your mind is just sunk into that object. That's gnar. You have gnar during that time. Okay. Say lende. Oh, those of you who can't see, LENDEJOKPA. Say lende, jopa. Lende, jopa. Len means a patch, like a patch on your clothes. Lende jopa means patching the meditation, and it's been mistranslated as a patch-like meditation. To me, patch-like means in patches you're meditating. That's not what it means. I also didn't translate it very well on this chart. It says patches where you lose the object. That's better. But what it really means is your mind is almost perfectly on the object, and you have short gaps where it's off the object, and you quickly patch them up. Okay? So there's three ways you can interpret patch, right? One is that you're concentrating or keeping on the object in patches. That's not what it means, okay? The second one is you have little patches where you're off of the subject. That's very close to what it means. And that's what it says on the chart, okay? Reading it again this morning, it's pretty clear that there will be gaps, and when you rush into the gaps and patch it, that's what it means. So you can call it patching meditation, okay? Like, you quickly become aware that you're off the object, and you quickly call the troops and patch the hole. Okay? Stick your finger in the dike. Okay? It's like that. Okay, that's patch-like. Patching. Let's call it patching meditation. Okay. So you have to fix your chart when you get it. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, by the way, yeah. At number 3, your main shtick is that you're using jhamba, which means the ability to bring the mind back to the object. Like you're able to hold the mind object and bring it back quickly. That's jhamba. Okay. That would be that's called power number 3. And that's where you're able to bring the mind back to the object of meditation, and with some effort, you're keeping it there. Okay. Both of those are the two flavors of the word Dhamma. It normally means to remember something. It has nothing to do with remembering here. It means the ability to keep the mind on the object with some effort and to bring it back quickly when you slide off. Okay, that's called Dhamma. Say, oh, this is N-Y-E, W-A-R, J-O-K-P-A. Say Nyewa, Jopa. Nyewa, Jopa. Nyewa means closely or tightly. Jopa means keeping the mind on the object. Here's how they describe this stage, okay? State number 4 of the 9, right? You can no longer lose the object, okay? Which means you have fixation. Fixation is good. Necha is strong, okay? Necha is good. You can no longer lose the object. But you can be swimming in what? Not even subtle. Agitation and dullness are there. And they are not weak yet. They're quite healthy. Okay, you're able to maintain the object in front of your mind, but you still have a lot of dullness and agitation. Okay. By the way, this each text is slightly different. There may be 8 or 9 Lam Rims that talk about this. And I'm using primarily Pabokwa Rinpoche's presentation. Okay. The English letters are D-U-L-W-A-R-J-E-P-A. Say Dua Chepa. Dua Chepa. If you know the word Vinaya in Sanskrit, the Tibetan translation is Ndulwa, okay, Ndulwa, which means to tame something, like to Dulwa a wild horse, like bronco riders are Dulwaing the horse, okay? That's the meaning of Dulwa. This is the past tense meaning already tamed or already controlled, okay? The mind is already under control, okay? Dua Chepa means to control the mind. The mind is controlled. I think in the chart it's called controlling the mind. Okay? Dua Chepa. At this point you don't have any more gross agitation or dullness. You've overcome the gross forms. You have fixation and clarity, but you don't have any ngā. Okay? The mind is fixed on the object. And what's clear? Your mind, right? Never forget that. We're not talking about the clarity of the object, we're talking about the clarity of the state of mind. How bright and bushy-tailed is your mind, okay? You have fixation on the object, you have clarity, but no intensity, no ngā. What's intensity? It's that sinking into the object, deep enjoyment of the object, real deep going into the mind of the object, as in a very, very good movie, in the best few minutes of a good movie or the best few minutes of a good book, okay? Where your mind just sinks into it, okay? They say at this point you have a problem with subtle dullness, okay? During this time you have a problem with subtle dullness. And they say that's a result of the attempt in the last stage to focus your mind inwards. You're not used to focusing your mind inwards. You're trying hard to focus your mind inwards. Dhamma is at its highest state in number 4. Okay? Dhamma is getting very strong in number 4. Like you're working very hard to keep the mind on the object. And as a result, you get into subtle dullness. Okay? A result of trying too hard or trying to get the mind, keep the mind on the object, you get some kind of dullness coming up, a subtle form of dullness, okay? So that's a reaction to the success of number 4, okay? That you have a subtle dullness starting. And again, meditation is like driving a car, and you watch the hands of somebody, like when you go home tonight, watch their hands, and they're constantly correcting. And meditation is like that. At each point, you have to stop and go back the other way. It's like a pendulum that gets closer and closer to center. And center is called Nyambar Jopa or Nyomjuk. The word itself means sama, staying in the middle, you know. But you have to go through this process of correcting, overcorrecting, correcting for the overcorrection, correcting for that correction, doing a minor correction for that correction. And then finally, what's the final correction? Don't correct it. Okay? Leave it alone, okay? That's the final correction. It's just reach center and you leave it alone, okay? So it's that process of finding center, okay? I'd like to take a break there and encourage you to... who's doing the thing with the posters? Is that... Oh. Okay. You hold the box, though, because I feel shy. Get your poster, and then the second half of this class, you can be looking at the poster as we go through, okay? Okay, take a break. You ready? The English is SHIWARJEPA. Say Shiva Chepa. Shiva Chepa. Shiva means peace. Shanti in Sanskrit. Okay, Sha. Sham. And Shiva Chepa means to make the mind peaceful. Okay? What was the problem that you were left with at the last one? Yeah, you have subtle dullness and there's no intensity. So between number 5 and number 6, you've been doing corrections to make up for the subtle dullness. And here's part of the answer to the question about subtle agitation. Subtle agitation comes at number 6 due to your efforts to stop your subtle dullness, okay? It's like you're turning to the left to stop your subtle dullness, and then you go a little too far. And then subtle agitation has to be corrected for. So subtle agitation comes up in response to the actions you undertook to stop your subtle dullness. That's the first thing I'll say about subtle agitation. Now I thought you'd like to hear two other quotations that we looked up in the computer, and I'm going to do advertisement. For about 11 years now, some of the people here, especially Robert Chilton and a lot of other people, nowadays 4 or 5 other people here working on it, we've been typing in Tibetan Buddhist texts in the monasteries in India. Now there's 23 centers in India. All the major monasteries, both of the major nunneries in Dharamsala, and a lot of the farming refugee camps and stuff like that, lay people are typing in text. So now we have 2,300 texts are input. it's about 150,000 pages on every subject. You should try to learn to use it at some point, okay? I mean, once your Tibetan gets good and somebody asks you what's subtle agitation, you can get 5 opinions in about 4 minutes. It took me about less than 10 minutes to see what the first Panchen Lama said, to see what Pabong Khyentse said, to say what Jerma Buchse said, 2 of his students said, and like that. So if you're studying Tibetan or something like that, you got to try to get a hold of one. And this guy named Eric Colombell has written an extraordinary program that it comes up in Tibetan, any size of the Tibetan you want. You can switch over to Roman letters. Very limited capacity to switch to English, but we're working on that, okay? A couple of the people here are working on the English equivalents, and then they will come up at the push of a button. So encourage you, if you're learning Tibetan, to get that. It's free. The disc is free. It's on a CD-ROM. And the program is free. A couple of students here, mostly Petra, Paul LeMay, Robert Chilton, got one for Lama Sopa. Got him a really fancy one. And it's been loaded with all the texts. And he's very excited about it. We're going to ship it off, I think, tomorrow, the next day, Petra. So I thought you might like to see it in the afternoon. And so Robert Chilton is over there. He'll be here with it in this afternoon, and you can see how it works, and you can see how you get the Tibetan. And then there's going to be English links are being made now where the English will pop up. So if you don't remember what's number 9, you can just ask, and it comes up. So also Maya Farrell, who's goofing off with her kids back there, worked on the catalog. The catalog is like 3 inches thick, and we'll have that here too. And it has all the English also. So you can see what's in there and poke around there. If you're studying Tantra, all of the deities have been listed there, and each one has about 9 categories, like the fire offering, the torma cakes, how to do the retreat, how to do the sadhana, how to do the jinlab, how to do the wang, how to do the jainang, all in separate categories with 4 or 5 texts in each one. So it's really cool what the mantra means, how to do the mantra. So for Tara, for example, there would be like 12 categories or something. And so you got to get good at that, and then you can use it. And the level of Buddhism as it enters America will be more pure than perhaps it's ever reached. No country in the history of Buddhism has it spread among the lay people in a very knowledgeable way and in a well-educated Buddhist way. So I think that's what we can do if a couple of you work really hard. Okay, and I really think the thing in Italy is fantastic. I heard a lot of good things about it. I heard nobody dropped out of 40 people, and it's 6 months now. And I really salute you, and I hope you keep going and bring us back a bunch of American teachers, okay? All right. Anyway, First Panchen Lama, Lamrim Marti. Sen Mikden La Yo Medu Minepa Chungse Toa Ni Goba Tamo Yin La means subtle agitation is when the mind has been slightly distracted from the object of meditation and is unable to stay there unshakably. Okay, that subtle agitation is when the mind is slightly distracted from the object of meditation. Okay, so he describes it almost as happening first, as opposed to subtle dullness, right? Then he says, you should use bringing the mind back to the object, holding the mind on the object, and watchfulness to correct for that, he says. Okay. But even if you attempt to apply temba, even if you try to bring the mind back and hold it on the object, chayu namla torani, and if the mind continues to wander off to some desire object, right? Some object that you're attracted to, like thinking about what's for lunch, or thinking about what you're going to do at work on Monday, or something like that. Goparakmayin. That's obvious dullness, or gross dullness. So it's very interesting. He explains it almost the reverse, you see? Subtle dullness comes first. You notice it. You attempt to correct for it. The mind refuses to correct for it. And then that's gross gross agitation. Okay? So. Let me repeat it. We're talking about how he asked about subtle agitation. Subtle agitation is where you first become aware of the mind wandering and you attempt to correct it with watchfulness and the bringing the mind back to the object. When it gets out of hand after that, you keep trying, and the mind still goes to what's for lunch. Then you've achieved gross agitation. Okay? And that's how the First Panchen Lama explains it. It's sort of like the reverse of what you might expect. He's almost like saying you get subtle agitation first, you attempt to correct for it, the mind bucks against you, and then you achieve gross agitation. Okay? Here's what Pabon Khrimpache said. Mikde yiki yune yuna shorte yune shorte rang re saku gombana je shigne je doatar mikten shorwa ni gopa miktengi yuni shorte. You lose the object of meditation. For example, people like you and me, if we're trying to meditate or visualize the body of a tantric deity, it disappears. Okay? It fades away, he says. Okay? That losing of the object is gross agitation. That's gross agitation. Then you know you have gross agitation. But there's another kind of agitation which is like water flowing under ice on a river. Like the river is covered with ice and there's an undercurrent of water flowing under the ice, implying that it might be hard to detect. Okay. Means you don't lose the object of meditation. He says it's as if you felt, ketabu means on the verge of losing the mind to the another object. So you have not lost the object. In subtle agitation is you haven't lost the object, but like water flowing under ice, you feel like you're about to lose the object, like your mind is about to go to another object, okay? Chorni gupa tamuyin, and that's subtle agitation. So subtle agitation in Pabongkar Rinpoche's presentation is a sort of a restless feeling of the mind where you're still holding on to the object, but you sense that you're about to lose it. And there's some kind of, as you said last night, I think what you said last night was good. It was like that. It's like some undercurrent of thoughts going that sooner or later they're going to come up to the surface and destroy you're going to lose the object. But so far, they're just running under your consciousness, or they're running in the back of your mind, some other thoughts. And that's subtle agitation. And then you know it's graduated to gross agitation when you lose the object. Okay. All right. So the problem at number six is subtle agitation. That's the problem at number six. Okay. The English letters there are NAM, PAR, SHI, WAR, JE, PA. By the way, we were wandering off the six powers. At stages number 5 and 6 are achieved by the power called watchfulness. Okay? What power was that? I think we're on to number 4, right? Power number 4 was watchfulness, and it applies at stages 5 and 6. And it detects when the mind is having problems. It detects dullness and agitation. That's the main thing. What is number 7? Number Shiva means really peace, okay? The mind is made, what do you say, peaceful, right? Completely peaceful, okay? You could say pacified or peaceful, okay? What does that mean? It means you've almost completely stopped agitation and dullness, all forms of agitation and dullness, okay? Even subtle, almost completely stopped. They come up just once in a while, like on and off, very briefly, do you get subtle dullness and subtle agitation. But you've stopped them, okay? There's a meditation text that there's a beautiful metaphor for this stage. I kind of like it. It says, up till now, agitation and dullness have been barging in and beating you up. Now they just show up once in a while and you kick ass. You know, okay? You know, it's called proactive, you know. It's no longer that they are picking on you. You're like this big, strong guy. At the beginning, you're like this 60-pound weakling, you know. And then by now, you're like Schwarzenegger. And they can only show up for brief times. And as soon as they show up, instead of this being a struggle, it's like there's no contest. You know, you just bam. You know, and it's you who's doing the punching instead of them. Like, you're not waiting for them to come and disturb your meditation. And you're not at their mercy. Now they're at your mercy. So if they dare to show their face, then you knock them out right away. And at this point, you have the energy and the power and the concentration. The minute they show up, even a subtle form, it's like, pow, and they're out of there. Okay, but you still have them showing up once in a while, just like that. Okay. No, power number 4, was it? Covers 7 and 8. Power number 5. Yeah, 4 is 5 and 6. Power number 5 is, I'm sorry, tsundru. Tsundru means, kicking ass, okay? working hard. Okay. Tsundra means like power, energy, force. Okay. Tsundra. Okay. Yeah, it covers 7 and 8. Yeah. You reach 7 and 8 by having tsundra. You see, that's the relationship of the powers to the mental states. When I say this power relates to this mental state, it means you use this power to get to that mental state. Okay? Yeah, but totally different meaning in meditation. Like Demba has a totally different meaning in meditation. Okay? The English letters here are TSE. CHIKTU JEPA. Say, Tsechiktu Chepa. Tsechiktu Chepa. Tsechik means single pointed. Okay, Tsechiktu Chepa means making the mind single pointed. The ability to focus the mind single pointed. Okay? You know, if you were in this class earlier, that that's a general definition of what state of mind? Careful. Tingenzin, which in Sanskrit is samadhi, not shamatha. Okay? Shamatha is big time samadhi. Every sentient being has samadhi. Bugs, ants, worms, amoebas. What are those things that eat, that one celled things that go around the other things? Amoebas. Every living creature has some form of tsechikpa, some kind of samadhi. They're able to focus on their food for several seconds. You see what I mean? In the Abhidharma, it says semgisamangchu means it's one of the 10 features of all living minds. You know, that they can concentrate on something for some amount of time. Okay. So in general, tsechik is part of the description of samadhi. Here, it's more specialized, and it has a specific meaning. The ability to focus the mind one-pointedly in meditation state number 8 means you have to undertake a little effort at the beginning of the session to stop your subtle dullness and subtle agitation. Like anything that might come up, you have to do a little bit of effort at the beginning of the meditation session. And then you're on cruise control the whole meditation session. Nothing else comes up for the whole rest of the session. Okay? And that's how you know you've reached number 8. You sit down, you do your preliminaries, you have to put forth a little bit of effort to get your mind onto that level, and then you just sit back and let go. And it cruises the rest of the time. No subtle dullness, no subtle agitation, no interruption of your meditation by those two things. It's Nyoba Jupa, Samadhi. And it's going straight down the middle, and you don't have to do anything. All you have to do is put forth a little bit of effort at the beginning, and then the rest of the meditation session is on cruise. Okay? And you don't need very strong watchfulness or Jemba. You're not like making effort to keep your mind on the object, and you don't need too much Sheshin. You don't have to be. In fact, you should probably lay off and not bother the meditation. Okay? The English letters are NYAM PAR JOK PA. Say Nyamba. Jokpa. Nyamba. Jokpa. Nyamba means equal, right? Level. Steady. Jokpa means fix the mind. Okay. How do we translate it? Reaching deep meditation. Okay. It's like deep meditation. Meaning no longer any effort required to go into a deep state of meditation and to avoid agitation and dullness. Okay. You don't even have to put the screws on at the beginning of the meditation. You sit down, you do your preliminaries, you decide to go into deep meditation, and you're there. And you don't have to monitor it very closely or anything. It's just automatic. The first, number 8 was cruise control after some effort at the beginning. Number 9 is cruise control from the beginning. Okay? Like that. And those are the difference. Is this shamatha? If you look at this, at the meditation chart, this is where you get Nyambar Jopa. This is mental state number 9. By the way, you're going to get a number called 28 is there. That just means it's the 28th caption from the bottom, okay? And then there'll be, in brackets, there'll be a number 9. We put the 9 mental states in the brackets, okay? So I don't want you to get confused. There's a 28 with a parentheses, and then there'll be a number 9 in the brackets. Number 9 in the brackets means that's actually here on the chart, the Tibetan number 9, up here in the upper corner, is Nyambar Jopa. But Shamatha's way up here at 29, okay? Over here, the elephant is lying down, and he's like sitting next to the elephant. Up here, he's sitting on the elephant. The elephant's all white. Where'd the monkey go? He ain't there anymore, okay? The black represents chingwa, dullness. The monkey represents distraction, of which agitation is one form. And by the time you get up here, no more dullness, and poor monkey is gone, okay? And you're just riding, okay? That's shamatha. So what's the difference between, you know, being on automatic cruise control and being in shamatha? I mean, isn't that like the best meditation you could have, to be on automatic cruise control? What's the difference between this and shamatha? What was the one aspect of shamatha that made it shamatha? Do you remember? Yeah. Xinjiang, intense physical pleasure and intense mental pleasure. Okay, this incredible feeling of woo, you know, like physically you're like, you could sit there for 3-4 hours and feel great. And all through the day you feel great, okay? And then mental Xinjiang is like all the time happy, all the time bright, all the time concentrated. Very few times of the day when you feel down or losing your concentration or anything like that. All through the day feeling mentally quite clear. And all through the day feeling physically quite healthy and light, okay? And that's, this guy is getting Xinjiang, so he's like flying. This is, says Xinjiang. And that this represents physical Xinjiang, you know, he feels like a feather, okay? And he's like flying off here. Okay, when the difference between state number 9, which is deep meditation, and shamatha, is that you get this intense physical, and then the mental pleasure is here. Sam Xinjiang, that's him. He's like, if you see him, he's sitting there like, you know, like that. You know, he's having a good time. All right, and that's what gives you, that's what makes shamatha. Did you see emptiness directly yet?
No.
No, okay. This is, at this point, you have reached Samten Dambu Nyerdo Mi Cho Me. Say Samten Dambu Nyerdo Mi Cho Me. The state of meditation you must be able to get into in order to see emptiness directly. It is not seeing emptiness directly. It's not Mars, it's the telescope to see Mars. You see what I mean? It's the difference between the tool and the object of the tool. You know, many people from all different traditions can reach this state. Okay, you could be a Hindu sadhu or a Christian mystic and you can reach this state of physical and mental bliss in meditation. And many traditions, Buddhist included, have mistaken that for what will save your life, and it's not, okay? I mean, you will eventually get old and die and not be able to do it anymore, okay? It doesn't last forever. Once you get there, you have to use it for something, okay? And there's a bodhisattva vow, I repeat, not to get too excited about that. You know, don't mistake that for the final goal. You have a little bit more to go, okay? It's a tool with which to see emptiness. And here he's got that sword in his arm, right? Like, he is cutting through reality, okay? He's like seeing emptiness directly. So, you know, up here he's like, hey, you still gotta go look up, you gotta go and look into the thing about emptiness, okay? You have to use this ability to concentrate and focus it on emptiness, okay? And that's the reason for meditation. It does give you Luki Xinjiang, you know? It does give you mental Xinjiang. But don't stop there, okay? You have to then turn this mighty elephant gun on a worthy object, which is emptiness, okay? So we're going to go after, in the next class, we're going to start talking about the elephant that you shoot with the gun, meaning we need a good meditation object, okay? It's not enough to get this intense powers of concentration and just use them to collect money or something like that. You know, you have to focus them on emptiness. And once you've gotten to this level, then finally you're in shape. in good shape to see emptiness directly. Okay, I like to compare it to the surface of some water, and until the surface is totally calm, you can't see reflections clearly in it. And I think the mind is very similar. Your mind will reach a point to where it's very, very still and clear. I mean, maybe stillness would be a good way to translate shamatha. Maybe we'll change it. Okay. Anyway, some kind of perfect mental stillness. And only then can you see emptiness, you see, directly. So if you don't meditate regularly, if you don't meditate for an hour a day, forget seeing emptiness. You cannot. You never will, you know. And only if you see emptiness can you stop your suffering. Okay, your physical suffering, aging process of getting old, and the mental suffering that we go through, and the process of relationships building up and then collapsing, can only be fixed by seeing emptiness directly. According to Buddhism, it's the only thing that can stop the physical process of aging and dying, and the mental suffering that all of us have. Okay, the only thing that can stop it permanently is to see emptiness directly, which means you'll never get there unless you get here. Okay, you must have the tool to see emptiness directly, and that's the only reason to have a course on meditation. Okay, is to get to here so you can turn the mind on emptiness. Okay, so the next three classes will be how to get to see emptiness, what you have to do to see emptiness, the process of seeing emptiness, and then using Tantra to speed the process up after you've seen emptiness, okay? And we'll be doing that the next three classes, okay? Yeah?
Power 6 then?
Oh, sorry. What was power 6? Dipa. Say Dipa. Dipa means being totally accustomed to something, you know? Disha. Somebody says, you know, do you feel cold? You say, no, not Kagamandu, not Disha. I've lived in Dharamsala for 5 years. I don't get cold anymore. That means Disha means totally used to it. Okay, so that's the power that allows you to go into automatic cruise control. Okay, that's the last power.
Okay.
That's power number six. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. She said, is the only kind of meditation that will get you to shamatha, is it true that the only kind of meditation that will get you to shamatha is one point of concentration? All forms of concentration are one pointed, so I don't quite get your question, you know. Oh, okay. She said, as opposed to discursive meditation, you know, where you are, or thinking about something. Somebody else asked me that during the break. It's a Dharma rumor. Okay? It's incorrect to say that you cannot achieve shamatha and still be thinking thoughts in your mind. That's not true. That's a Dharma rumor. And Jetsun Khapa took great pains to point that out. And he took great pains to define it carefully so that people wouldn't think that. So in the next class in the afternoon, we'll go into the first part will be the three kinds of meditation. Two of them are discursive. Two of them involve thinking about things. Okay. One of them doesn't involve thinking about things, and that's probably a better one for seeing emptiness, okay? And I can say that. You can say that. But what they mean when they say non-discursive or non-dual or, you know, to reach a state of non-duality, all it means is that while you are perceiving emptiness directly, during that time, you cannot have another thought, okay? During that direct experience of emptiness, you cannot be aware of colors, shapes, sounds, smells, tastes, tangible objects, and your own thoughts. Okay? Cannot be aware of them. Why? During the direct perception of emptiness. They are not ultimate reality. Okay? They are relative reality. They are our normal reality. And when you're in the direct perception of emptiness, you can only perceive ultimate reality. All other realities are excluded to you. Only a Buddha can perceive both at the same time. So if you're a plain old person like us, or like me, and you are seeing emptiness directly, it's impossible that you are having any other perception. it's impossible that you're having any perception of normal reality. Impossible. Your mind is at something dominyatomijame, and from that platform, it is in direct communion with ultimate reality, and you cannot perceive anything else for that 20 minutes. And that's all they mean when they say non-discursive. Okay? For the 20 zillion years before you see emptiness directly, in meditation, you goddamn well better be thinking about meditation. And you goddamn well better be thinking about what emptiness means. Okay? And that requires thinking. Okay? That's the second of the three, of the five paths. Tsok Jor Tong Gong Min Lob. Every Buddhist book in the world says the same thing. From ancient India. Okay? And Jor means millions of years, or many, many years spent, could, by the way, it doesn't have to be millions, it could be less, okay? But many years in deep meditation, contemplating emptiness, you know? Contemplating, what does it mean when I say empty? What did he mean when he said it wasn't the parts? What did he mean when he said it wasn't the whole? You know what I mean? Of course, you're thinking about something. The idea that spacing out, thinking about nothing, watching your thoughts flow by, and just sitting there is wrong, okay? And it will not, it won't get you where you want to go. You must have proper teachings on emptiness, and then you must go think about them. And in a deep state of meditation, you think about them, you know? That's all, yeah.
Once you've reached emptiness, seeing emptiness directly the first time, do you automatically achieve that state for the meditation?
She said, once you have a single direct perception of emptiness, do you see it frequently afterwards? Okay. According to scripture, most of the major milestones take place subsequently during direct perceptions of emptiness. In practice, much more time spent using what you saw to remove your mental afflictions, which is the definition of the fourth path, Gomlam, you know. And that's by day-to-day practice, and not so much by direct perception of emptiness. It's using what you found out to remove your mental affliction. And that's the definition of nirvana. Nyundip malupa pambi soso tango. To use what you saw during the direct perception of emptiness to rid yourself of your mental afflictions and your suffering forever. You know, that's all. Okay? And that involves mostly thinking about the Four Noble Truths, which are the great ideas that happen to you right after you see emptiness, directly. And noble is a very bad translation of Arya, okay? Arya means those things are only seen by a person who's just seen emptiness. In the 24 hours following the first direct perception of emptiness, you have intense, direct realizations of your future lives, of the day you're going to be enlightened, you're able to read other people's minds, you have intense, direct personal experience of bodhicitta, and then forever after, for years and decades of your life, you are using those understandings, which are grouped together into four groups and called the four Arya truths, okay, to reach nirvana, to stop your mental affliction forever, okay, and you can study the four Arya truths before that, you can understand them in an intellectual way. But only right after, on the day you see emptiness directly, and when you come out, for about the next 15 hours, you experience directly the four Arya truths, and that's why they're called Arya truths, because a person who has just seen emptiness directly is called an Arya, okay? All right? And all those other explanations are wrong, okay? That's what the four Arya truths are, and that's when they happen, directly. And that's the only way you can stop your mental afflictions. You must see emptiness directly. You must have those experiences afterwards on that day. And then you use that to remove your mental afflictions, okay? And which means if you don't learn to meditate, you cannot get that way. You will suffer forever. You will continue to suffer until the day you decide to get here. And nothing, according to Buddhism, there's no way, no other way to remove your suffering. You will suffer until the day you decide to buckle down and reach this state. And you cannot reach it if you don't meditate an hour a day. Impossible. Okay, that's all. Okay? Yeah.
Before you get to those 20 minutes, can you have like flashes of direct?
She said, can you have flashes of direct perception of emptiness before you reach the 20 minutes. No. Okay? You cannot have a flash of a direct experience of emptiness before that. You know, when you have it for an extended period of time, 20 minutes, say, and you know it afterwards, and you have absolutely no doubts about it. Why? You see your future lives. You meet the Dhammakaya, the Buddha. You have a direct experience of bodhicitta. You perceive directly the day of your enlightenment. Now tell me anything. I don't care. What are you going to tell me after that? You know? How does a person act after that? You see what I mean? What can bother a person after that? You see what I mean? And what can you say to a person after that? Could they ever doubt themselves again? No, I mean, one of the only three mental afflictions you forever eliminate upon seeing emptiness directly is doubt about this path, you know. You saw your own enlightenment directly. So who's going to tell you anything? Who cares about what the stock market is doing this week? You know what I mean? You don't care. You perceive directly that for a fixed time in the future, you will be healthy, you will have a happy life, you will always have enough money, you will always have great Dharma teachers, and at the end of that process, you will become a Buddha. So who needs to tell you, what do you need to know about what the weather was in Las Vegas yesterday? You know what I mean? You don't care about anything else, because you saw it directly. And you can get there. Every thinking, normal American, you don't have to be Milarepa, you don't have to be Lati Rinpoche. A normal American who undertakes this sincerely, with correct training, and without all the Dharma rumors, you know, can eliminate all that misinformation and practice that sincerely in an accurate presentation, you will and you must see emptiness directly. And then you're out of here, you know. Everything becomes true after that. So do it, okay? That's all. Yeah. Yeah.
What about
the technically speaking, you can see emptiness directly and not have a feeling of bodhicitta afterwards. Technically speaking, there is such a thing. Okay? But since you're all Mahayana, students of Lama Yeshe and Lama Sumpa, I didn't even talk about it. All right, here we go. Yeah. We have this plot to help LMB by selling these posters, right? And I think we did okay. We have this another plot to help Chichen Rinpoche. We're going to give away some books tomorrow. And then tomorrow evening, we're going to have dinner together. I think it's 6 o'clock?
6:30.
And the idea is you got to eat anyway. So just come and eat there, and then they're going to give some of the money to Vajrapani. And it helps to support this place. The place is not self-existent, and it looks like that, but not really. And so please come, you know. Please, we usually have a good time. We'll do a little Dharma teaching there, okay? I was wondering when we were going to throw in the 5 obstacles according to Nagarjuna. So maybe I'll blackmail you. There's a very sweet thing by Nagarjuna that I didn't have time to cover yet. So we'll do that at dinner. How's that? We'll make the dinner meaningful, okay? And you can sneak in and hide in the back if you don't have any money. And we'll do it then. We'll go over the 5 obstacles. They're very sweet because they apply to meditating, making your whole day meditative, okay? So try to come, and it helps Vajrapani, okay? It's a nice, painless way to help Vajrapani. You got to eat anyway, right? Yeah. I wouldn't leave you without teaching you to do the book. That's tomorrow afternoon. That's the final class, okay? It's very important that you come to that one. How many people don't have a book? I mean, it's about... Yeah, okay. We have enough. All right. We'll do some. So please come see Tom if you're planning to come to dinner, okay?
Thank you.
Sanam yeshe tadashi, sanam yeshe lechur.